Well, welcome to Blind Squirrel Radio. Howdy. I am Brad McFadden, and directly above me is Robert Harrington. Directly below, Kidge, and that's 421 is his last name. So, welcome to the show, and sit back, enjoy. We're going to talk about the feet of peace, gospel, putting on the armor. We're going to put on armor, and it's going to be on your feet, so stay tuned. All right. That is The End Is Where We Begin by 1,000 Foot Crutch, and that was going out to Robert Harrington.
I'd like to know how you decided who was on top and who was below you.
It's a little picture. You ever seen the little picture of the two blind squirrels with the three little squirrels on it?
No.
Little squirrel heads sticking out of the little tree trunk there.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe you were trying to make it like it was the Brady Bunch.
Well, okay. You could do that, too. So there's only three of us instead of, like, six or...
Bobby. Dibs on Bobby. Because he was always cute.
Okay, I'm Greg.
Okay.
Greg always had
to drive
everyone.
What are we even talking about?
Okay, during Vietnam, there was a show that actually disconnected you from reality called The Brady Bunch.
Yes.
Is that like that 70s show?
It's like that 70s show, but in a really cool house. Yeah.
For real.
Lived in a really cool house.
No, what is this picture you people are talking about?
Oh, the picture.
It'll be
on the thing. You've seen it because it originally had you. It was me, you, and Faith.
if you need me to help you out with, you know, with your wife's name again, just let me know.
Sure, thank you. Okay. It was Kidge, Brad, and Faith, and I just replaced Faith with Kidge. No, I messed it up, didn't I? Because Robert was supposed to be, anyway. So yeah.
If one of the squirrels is slightly graying, that's me.
I don't even remember what this picture looked like.
So. Well, it was cover art for the show that appeared on iTunes, and I'll put it on there for this week.
But one that can finally rent a car is Kidge.
Yes.
So. The one that what?
Yeah, no, I can. Yeah, right. Gosh.
Okay, well.
All right.
Let's get on with the show this week. We're going to be talking about, we've been talking about the armor of God, and which is cool, and you should really do that. And somebody want to read us the passage there that we're talking about, Ephesians 6:15?
Sure. It says, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace.
Oh, I meant with the... That's it. The you know what? Fine. Just be that way. Be a literalist. See if I care. Therefore,
I will.
Starting in verse 13, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, having done all to stand firm. Stand therefore, having fastened the belt of truth and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, which we covered in the last 2 weeks. If you haven't heard those, you need to go listen. Those were good. And as shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. Somebody switched my versions on YouVersion to ESV. What evil person did that? Because that was not me.
I think
someone
I did
the Reformed
it.
Church.
Yeah, somebody in the Reformed Church did that to me, and it's not right. It needs to be KJV. KJV only. Okay. So there you go. So the 15 says, as Kidge originally read it, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. That just sounds better. And then we'll move on to the other pieces later. But that's where we're at tonight. Now, Robert, you wanted to talk a little bit about the history of the foot.
The history of the foot.
The history of the boot. The boot that they wore.
It was first invented the day we were born. Interesting, you know, we are normally born with only four toes, and then that fifth one drops at around each, it's like 6 months.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm in a mood today.
You are.
Best episode
you
ever.
Are. I'm going to send you to the corner.
Okay. Yes, they were.
Wait, did somebody put the dunce hat on Robert? Did somebody somebody do that when we weren't looking?
He was talking about that earlier.
Man, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, they were called Kaliga. Kaliga, Kidge?
Yes, Kaliga. Which Kaliga. Is where we get the name Caligula, which means little boot.
There you go.
Really?
Yep. Caligula was a son of an emperor, and so when the emperor was going around in war, he'd bring his little boy with him and would put him in a little mock-up of a Roman armor, and all the soldiers, you know, loved this little boy running around dressed up like them, and so they'd call him, you know, Caligula, which meant little boots, because he was wearing little boots.
Awesome. How cute is that?
Wow.
And he was a jerk when he grew up.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, little did they know. Well, see, secretly, he hated that name because it's Little Boot. I mean, who wants to be called
who
that?
Who wants to be called Little Boot, especially if you're king of something?
Yeah, right.
Right. Go ahead. Okay,
so these were the military boots. I mean, the boot, that word is sort of loosely used here because it looks just like sandals. Yeah. From the pictures that I saw.
Yeah, and I've got a picture I'm going to post in the show notes, mm-hmm. which will show you exactly what we're talking about. Now, these Roman – I'm sorry. I don't want to step on you. Go ahead.
No. Oh, okay. So they were made from leather, and it was more straps of leather because I guess it was more comfortable that way. And they were laced up the center, much like you would lace a boot today. And it wrapped around the ankle completely. But the most important thing about it was that – there were things called hobnails that were hammered into the sole, and they are much like cleats that a football player would use.
Is that all you got? I think this is so cool. I can't wait to talk about this. I'm so excited. I'm sorry. Is he done? I want to talk.
they also were very protective of that very delicate fifth toe that just dropped.
Oh my goodness.
So
you're fired.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
I think this is so cool. I did I found a really cool website that was that had all these references to this it's a book that somebody wrote an entire how bored do you have to be, right? To be a professor and write a book on these whatever it's called. But a guy wrote an entire book on this thing. And there's a webpage that references that book and tells you about it. So you don't have to go out and buy that because it's like a textbook, you know, for college or something. And anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to that too. But it's really cool. Rome was very ingenuitive anyway, but and it's just like Robert described it. But the reason why those slats and the way it laced it did is because they were one size fits all. That lace, it wasn't a shoe, and you'll see when you see the picture, but it wasn't like a shoe that your foot had to fit inside and then you laced it up. The laces became, with these leather straps that came up, actually became part of the shoe. So regardless of how big your foot is, and there was a limit, but as long as you were anywhere between a 6 and a 10, you know, you could adjust this thing to fit your foot. And so people could make them. They didn't be custom made, because back then you just can't go to Walmart and pick out the size of shoe you wanted. But they could make these in Rome or wherever whoever they'd conquered recently, and said, you're going to make shoes the rest of your life. Okay. So they would make these things and then ship them out to the military. And of course, they were all made of leather, and they did wear out a lot. And so they made a lot of these, and they were very important. And to the soldier, and I'll let Kidge talk about why that's so important to the soldier. But I just want to talk a little bit about these shoes and how cool they were. Now they had these. They were made so that you could actually wear them without anything around them. They were leather, but they were a tanned leather, and so that they would fit on your foot, and they would fit snugly enough that they wouldn't rub you raw. They wouldn't rub blisters on your foot, and yet they were pliable enough that you could walk in them, and they would bend to the shape of your foot and protect your foot from whatever you're going to step on. And so, but and they were, and you could wear them with nothing under them, in warmer climates, or you could actually wear them with a sock, and then it would adjust to fit over the sock, and actually cause you to keep your foot warm. And they would adapt these for all different kinds of purposes. When they went to England, they actually brought palm leaves with them. And while they were in England, because England is so muddy, and when they were over in that part of the world, they would have palm leaves from other parts of the world that they would wrap their feet in before they put them in these shoes to keep their feet dry. It was amazing. And then they also found tales of soldiers wearing two socks with these, I don't know what kind of socks they were, but they were whatever, and they were, but they would have, they put straw in between the socks, which would actually cause insulation, and they could wear them in very cold climates. And Robert said that they would nail these spikes in the bottom of them. They give them extra grip when they were fighting, because a lot of their fighting was hand to hand, where they would, we talked a little bit about this, or we'll talk more about this when we talk about the Shield of Faith, but the way they fought in really tight-knit groups, and they would actually push against the enemy. They would be like a moving wall. And so it was important to have a good grip. You didn't want the soldiers in front sliding back into you if you were in the rear. So having a good grip was important, and they would put these little spikes in there, which was really cool.
Those are the hobnails.
The hobnails, right. Yeah. But they didn't march with those. They would actually have another pair of shoes without those in them that they would march with. And
that's interesting. Yeah, because I thought, geez, just, you know, out walking, because, you know, as a soldier, most of your life is spent walking or digging a trench.
right.
So.
And then another very important aspect of these shoes was actually where they came to. They came up onto the ankle, which also provided an incredible amount of support for those cleats. See, those cleats wouldn't do any good if your foot just slid right off the shoe. Okay. You know, you can, as long as your shoe could stick in the dirt, but your foot's going to slide off of it. You know, but having the brace up the ankle provided so much more stability. I mean, it was like, you know, an incredible amount of sturdiness to the foot. And then with the lace coming up the front of the ankle, it just all worked together. Like some, and it's hard to know that if they just, it was trial and error and they just figured it out and they didn't really engineer the shoe, or if this was actually made by an engineer who figured all this stuff out. But I don't, you know, who knows?
Well, but the Romans were great adopters of other people's technology. And since they were just conquering people after people,
you know,
just like trial and error, you're just learning from what they learned.
True. And one final thing I want to say about the shoe, and again, this is, it's hard to know if they knew, it's hard to know if they did this on purpose, but the shoe contributed to the health of the soldier. You know, soldiers were, you know, Roman soldiers were more healthy than a lot of other people in the world because of certain things they did. They were the first ones to have sort of the Roman army had a latrine policy. I don't know if they, you know, it's hard to imagine that they knew that if flies landed on your poop and then landed in your food, you're going to get dysentery. It's hard to know that they knew that, but somehow they figured it out that, hey, if we poop over there and eat over there, we'll be healthier. So, but one of the key aspects of these shoes is that one of the main entrances for parasites besides food is through the bottom of your feet. And a lot of people that they were fighting were barbarians and they didn't wear shoes. But the Roman soldiers had shoes, and so they were overall a more healthy group of people than other people's armies, because most people's armies were just farmers who were drafted into it. They didn't have, not many nations back then had standing armies. So anyway, so that's, I just thought it was really cool how important and how well thought out the Roman shoe actually was.
Yeah, and to help with that, apparently they were also, with the free passage of air around through the holes and that sort of stuff, through to the feet, it actually helped reduce the likelihood of blisters when they were marching. And because they were not just a entirely enclosed boot, that air and the ability for water to not collect inside the boot was also a added health benefit.
There you go.
That we haven't seen since then. So.
And they also had a steel toe variety.
Oh, here we go.
When they were working in the factory.
Didn't we fire you? Yes. I'm sorry. Oh, I thought we fired you. They had ones with wings on them that would allow you to fly around.
Right.
So let's relate this back to the scripture. Okay, all that was fun trivia. Now, let's go back to the scripture. And what does he mean? Shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Don't everybody go at once. Robert?
Okay. Well, you just want me to read what I found?
Sure.
Okay. Offensively, this piece will help you to stand with your feet planted firmly on the Word of God and stay there, unmoved by the devil's threats and lies. It will protect us when we walk through the rough places and keep us steady in the heat of a battle. It will keep our spiritual foes where they belong, under our feet. So it kind of speaks to what you were saying about with the Romans would essentially be a wall, mm-hmm. on their front lines.
Right.
And with that, they could push, but they could also stand their ground.
Right. Very good. Yes. Also, I think it's the preparation of the gospel of peace. Kids, you want to talk about the preparation?
The preparation.
I thought you had a note about that.
Didn't have enough time this week.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had a note about that. All right, I'll take that. Putting on these shoes is not a large ordeal. It's not something that would take you hours to do. They were fairly simple, but it is something you had to do before you went into battle. You just didn't grab your shoes and run. You had to sit down, put them on, lace them up, make sure they were snug and fit well and adjusted properly, and then you would go into battle. So these were something that you did as preparation for battle, not something that you did in the heat of the moment of battle. So you didn't, you grab your sword, you use your shield, but you don't think about your shoes while you're in battle. There's something you do, you put on, you prepare beforehand. And that's what the gospel of peace is about. We are saved. We don't get saved in the heat of battle. We don't put on the gospel of peace in the heat of battle. That's something we need to do before we go in to fighting the spirits that are attacking us in life, because then it's too late. But if we stop then and realize, oh, you know what? Well, we're not prepared to fight because we haven't done this. Then our enemy's going to get the better of us. We need to make sure that we're prepared, that we understand the gospel of peace, that we have put it on, so to speak, that we've accepted it, that we are secure in it, and then we can go into battle, and it is something that we can rely on in battle, something that will serve us in battle, but not something that we're going to be picking up and using in the heat of the battle. So, and that's why it's so important. So what is the gospel of peace? Kids, you could probably read Romans 5, 9 through 11 to help us out there.
Yeah, sure. It says, "Much more then, having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And not only that, but we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation."
Good. Many people talk about, when people talk about peace these days, we see the peace symbol. We see this, the flagman with the circle around him. I'm talking about the peace symbol from the 60s. And it's on, it's a very fashion-y thing to put on clothes and to put around and even on bumper stickers and everything. It's sort of equated with somebody taking the high road, this kind of peace. But that's not the kind of peace the Bible is talking about. If we read one of the famous passages of Matthew 5:29, where Jesus tells us, if someone slaps you, to turn the other cheek. Well, he doesn't say run away. He doesn't say back down to what you just said. He doesn't say surrender. He says stand your ground and turn the other cheek. Now, in Hebrew culture, that meant something a little different than it does to us. Turning the other cheek in Hebrew culture, if you slap somebody, you would slap them with the back of your hand. If you were slapping somebody out of rebuke, somebody out of, if you were slapping somebody out of anger, somebody that you didn't know, somebody that you were trying to disgrace argue with, you would slap them with the back of your hand. But slapping somebody with the front of your hand would be something you would do to your wife or to your children. That would be something you were trying to, you were, it was a, be a correction. It would be a, an intimate thing to do. Slap him with the front of your hand. So when Jesus said this, turn the other cheek, you're forcing that person then to basically slap you, either to draw their hand back and have to that's not the natural thing to do. You would turn the other cheek too, because they would slap them with the other hand, with the other side of their hand. And this may not be what, completely he was trying to get to, but what he was saying is stand your ground and take it. Stand your ground, stand firm, stand on the gospel of peace, and continue to fight. That's what he means by turning the other cheek. He's not saying give what you've been given. And, that's what he's trying to get at here. It's you don't fight the same way your enemy fights, but do stand your ground. And in that, you will have peace. So the gospel of peace is not something of a surrendering, other than surrendering to Christ. It's not surrendering to your enemy. It's standing your ground and standing in peace. So I think that's a distinct difference between the peace in the gospel and sort of this fashionable secular peace.
I will quote someone. Peace is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of justice. Harrison Ford, Air Force One.
Excellent. That's an excellent
very
quote.
Nice.
Very nice quote.
Yeah. It's not often I get to pull that one out, but okay.
Did he originally say that, or was he quoting someone else?
I don't read a lot. I watch movies.
I think we should Google that. What's the quote again? Peace is not the absence
of conflict, but the presence of justice.
Dalai Lama.
Did you already do it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. Okay. You're a faster typer than me.
But the ability to cope with it.
Okay, so there you have it.
Right?
Yep.
All?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about the gospel of peace or preparation?
Well, I was just kind of playing around with the idea of I don't really know where I'm going to go with this, but I'll just stop talking if it sounds stupid.
Why should that stop you? It hasn't stopped you yet.
That shouldn't stop me. Steel toe. I'm serious. He had steel toe because they had regulations.
Yeah, right.
Of the cleats. Well, you've got cleats for like different occasions. Let's say that you're playing a football game. Okay, and if it's just a, like a nice warm sunny day, then you have cleats of a certain length. And, but if it's raining and it's muddy, then sometimes, like midway through a game, they'll actually change their cleats. So can anything be done with that idea? Yeah. And it's usually like the running back, like if he wants to run outside and he slips when he makes his cut, then they put longer cleats on.
Sure, but they don't do that while he's running.
Right.
He doesn't do that in the middle of a play.
Well, sure.
That's something he prepares for on the sideline, right?
Exactly.
Awesome.
So I don't know what to do with that scripturally speaking. But I wanted to say
it
that
it feeds
I
into
that.
The idea of preparation. There you go. I think it supports preparation. The gospel of peace is something that is part of your preparation for battle, not something you do in the heat of battle. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it works.
Okay, very good.
Excellent observation there, Robert.
I said stuff.
Yay.
I like cheese.
I was going to add just a note on the importance of the stability in your feet in swordsmanship as well.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
I had studied Italian long swordsmanship and that sort of stuff, and there was this diagram of... It's take too long to explain it, but part of it was that this it had a picture of a man surrounded by different animals, that each represented a specific trait of a swordsman. And the one at his feet was an elephant with a castle on his back. Mm. And it the quote that went along with that translated says, strength, I am the elephant and I have a castle for my burden. And never do I kneel down, nor do I lose my true place. And it, so it basically was saying that if your feet have to be, your feet and your legs have to be stable and strong enough that if someone tries to knock you over, you can't be knocked over. If you need to be able to attack, you need to be able to have your feet in a position so that you can move forward, and so that you, and you can move forward quickly, or you can retreat quickly, or you can have the authority of the battlefield already in your domain because you have the footwork to be able to stand up to that. So it's a just something that I had
Excellent.
Felt like reporting.
Excellent. So that's how important this is to our battle, to our spiritual battle, is that we need to be we cannot obey the command orders of the commander if we do not have the proper if we have not taken the time to prepare our feet properly, and with that we can then go where we need to go and hold our ground when we need to hold our ground. Good.
It's very important with. You know, things like, well, okay, look, I you know, I love, what is it, Dancing with the Stars? And they have to keep their feet moving or they get bad points from that angry guy.
Robert, you're just a lot of help tonight, I tell you.
It's the presence of justice.
Okay, moving on. Moving on. We're going to move on to... We're going to go into the fun part of the show, which is the part Robert wanted to go to all the, from the beginning.
The whole thing is fun. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
Let's move on to the after chat. And we're going to talk about the coolest stuff out there right now and the lamest stuff out there right now. But before that, we had a question before the show. And it doesn't really fit with coolest or lamest, I don't think. Maybe. Maybe we can we'll phrase it this way. What is the coolest Will Smith movie out there, and what is the lamest Will Smith movie out there? Because we were talking about, we were actually seeing the three of us, because it was three of us, and then I reminded us of a Will Smith song. So we played the Will Smith song, and then Robert says, hey, what's the best Will Smith movie? So that's where we're at. So what's your answers, people?
There's not a... Well, I...
He doesn't
are
make a lot
judging
of
the movie... Now, is it the movie or is it him in the movie? Like, is it his role? Because there's a lot of people I always like the actor, even though it's a bad movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know that he's made any movies that I didn't like him.
Exactly.
Yeah, so let's just say, what's the best Will Smith movie? What's the lamest Will Smith movie? Let's just judge the movie that he's in. So the lamest is fairly easy for me.
Oh, really? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Wild Wild West.
Oh, do you know, that is not even on my radar anymore because it was so bad. I was just, was that a thing? I thought I dreamed it.
it was a real thing.
I was the target audience for that movie at the time. I was the right age and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't think I can necessarily speak to.
So you liked it, is what you're saying?
I don't. It has been a very, very, very long time since I've seen it. So,
well, that sort of tells you it wasn't very good.
Wow.
Or you would have rewatched it.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So what is? Do you have a different one that you want to add to the lamest Will Smith movies, Kitch?
Oh man!
Since you didn't jump on Wild Wild West.
Yeah, because I don't jump on bandwagons.
Right.
lamest Will Smith movie. I don't know.
Robert, do you have a lamest one?
Well, the one that I would sort of... I mean, after you just blew me away with that one.
what were you thinking of before I said that one?
number two on the list is much better than that one. But, you know, just when you rank them all, I think I would have to say the second Men in Black movie.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it just, you know, it let me down.
Really?
Compared to the first one. Now, you know, of course, he was great.
Yeah, of course.
You know, well, but yeah, that what's her name, Boyle chick in, and I just don't care for her.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Three was really good, though.
Three was really
three
good.
Three was fun, yeah.
James Brolin and, yeah.
I was actually going to say that I think 3 is the best movie that I've seen with Will Smith in it.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, wow. You are so wrong. Okay.
Okay.
I'll put kids down. I'll put kids down for MIB 3 for Will Smith.
Either that or I Am Legend.
I Am Legend was mine. You just stole mine. That was the best Will Smith movie.
And I'm going to have to agree. I can't believe that we agreed on that.
We all three agreed on that. Well, two of us. Kids, you put MIB3 a little ahead of that. So, I'll say this one. This is a different, because there's really two categories of Will Smith movies. There's the touching ones, and then there's the ones where he saves the world, right? There's nothing in between. He doesn't do anything else. He does.
That's true.
Ones that make you cry or ones where he saves the world. That's it.
Right.
So, The crime movies, he did The Golf. What was the name of that one?
Bagger Vance.
Yes.
Bagger Vance.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was an excellent movie, and I think that one beats 6 Degrees of Separation.
I haven't seen either one of those. Hang on a second. Let me write these down.
Why didn't I just pull up a list of Will Smith movies to begin with?
I don't know.
Well, 6 Degrees of Separation was one of his first movies. And yet it was still pretty good. I mean, it was a serious attempt at acting. It wasn't fun. He played a con man, or con kid, because he was fairly young, but it was really good. It was very touching. But the legend of whatever his name is, Vance,
Bagger Vance,
was better, much better, I thought.
I think I've decided what my least favorite movie is of Will Smith, and that would be Independence Day.
Really?
Oh, really?
Well, okay, I'll give you this. I've rewatched it several times, and the movie itself does not hold up.
No.
It is very, very lame. But the best part of that movie is every scene with him in it.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Exactly. Yeah, the movie has a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
And oh, my gosh.
The speeches of the president were so lame.
I just realized I need to change my best Will Smith movie.
Oh, you're changing your best.
Yeah, to I, Robot.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah, oh, that was so good.
That is my final answer.
Final answer.
Okay, so you're changing MIB3
uh-huh.
to iRobot. Yes, yeah. iRobot was excellent.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so there, of course, and he almost played second fiddle in that movie. I loved the line in that movie, though, the Christian reference in that movie, where she's making fun of him and saying, well, you know, a robot can't kill another person. Be like, man, walking on water. And he goes, and he's looking around the room, and he never stops looking around the room. He just says, well, there was this guy. There was this one guy.
Actually, there were these two guys. It's just, you know, lost his
one
focus.
Didn't do well.
one didn't do for the water.
But
they're making a Hancock too? What?
Yeah, they are.
That one was
okay.
It was okay.
It wasn't as positive of, you know, he's just so dark in that one.
Yeah.
What was Kidge's worst? I forgot. I didn't.
Independence Day.
Independence Day.
Yeah.
Okay, write this down. So it's in the show notes. Okay.
I love when
he's dragging the alien across the desert, and he turns around and says, I could be having a picnic right now, but instead I'm dragging your stinky...
And what's that smell?
Dreadlock.
What's that smell?
What's that smell?
That's the best movie. That's the best scene in that entire movie.
Yeah. All right.
I'm excited to see After Earth, though.
What?
After Earth.
Is that a Will Smith thing?
Yes, it's his latest movie that's coming out.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I haven't even seen a preview for that. Okay.
With the only actors in the entire thing, I believe, are him and his son.
Huh.
Okay, then.
I hope that's really good. Well, now, wait. Didn't he do another movie like that where he was locked in a bathroom or something? Where he was homeless? It was him and his son?
What was that one called?
Yeah, that was more of a...
Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah.
Oh, that was one of the Tearjerker movies.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. I don't think I saw that one.
No, I only watched those kinds of movies, those quote-unquote important films once. Because they really lose their impact the second time.
Yeah. So he's made three of those? He made The Pursuit of Happiness.
7 Pounds.
Oh, I forgot about 7 Pounds.
Yeah.
That was a really good one, though.
Great movie, but great I only need movie. To see it once.
Oh, yeah, because that's sort of one of the Sixth Sense movies. Once you figure it out, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chelsea figured it out early, so she's going, mm-hmm, throughout the whole movie, mm-hmm.
There's a part of you that says, yeah, he's a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he's so lame.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, yeah, you know, he did all those MIB movies, you know. But, you know, get over it. He was a rapper. But, man, he's had a great career. And he's had a lot of really good acting. I mean, and, oh, well, there you go. I kind of grew up with him, you know. Because I guess he's a few years younger than me, but not much.
Well, you know, he's one of those, I don't know if you wouldn't say child actor, but child performers that mm-hmm. has turned out just fine. You know what I mean? There's, you know, it's like, it's him, Jason Bateman, and Ron Howard. And I think that's it.
Well, how many have moved from rap to acting, though? I mean, him and Marky Mark is it, right?
Oh, no. Ice-T, Ice Cube.
No. I mean, that successfully moved from.
Oh. If you count Law and Order.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Crime drama. Crime dramas.
Crime drama. All right. Well, I have to get on to at least one more thing because it's sort of time sensitive. And that is Gone Baby Gone by Boz Scaggs. If you like. Wow. My voice just jumped out of my left. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. But if you like blues at all, and this is not. This is more of a smooth kind of. And I'll play a little bit of it for you. It's free. Google Play is offering this for free. And they do this occasionally, so you saw it's pretty good there. It's Boz Scaggs. The album is called Memphis, and the song is Gone Baby Gone, and it's free on Google Play right now. And so if you like Boz Scaggs or blues at all, get that. It's a good one. So I wanted to share that. They do this occasionally. They'll put out a free song to promote Google Play, to get the buzz about Google Play out there, and to promote an album. But usually they're really bad.
Oh, are they?
They're really young. They're trying to get, because their target audience is the 20-somethings, right? And or the teens. I don't even know what their target audience is. But usually the songs they put out are really hip-hop, really, really young kind of.
Really, really top 40.
Disney sort of songs. Oh. And Disney with cussing, that kind of thing. And
but, so TriStar.
So this is the first one I've seen that's an adult song offered by Google Play. So check that out. I've almost removed the, cause I get a, I'm a member of Google Play. And so I've signed up to get these promotions in my email, and I've almost unsubscribed a couple of times just because they hardly ever offer me anything I want. Now I'm glad I didn't, cause that's a good song.
There you go.
Now, was that one of those things where, like, you get 12 songs for free, but then you got to buy the other ones at, like, full price within a year?
No, you don't sign up for anything. You just go there and download it right now. Download it, yeah. I don't think you have to be a member of Google. I don't even think you have to be a member of Google Play to get the song. But Google Play is free. You can be a member of Google Play for free. And what Google Play is, it's like a cloud player. Reservoir for your music, and you can take all of the music that you have and put it in Google Play, and it uploads it. It takes, depending on how many songs you have. I had thousands, so it took 3 or 4 days to get them all up there, and it does it in the background, you know, at night or whatever, and just uploads everything in there. But once it's up there, and it's as far as I know, it's unlimited. It didn't limit me, and I have, like I said, I had thousands of songs. I mean, like 3,000 or 4,000 songs. So it's really nice. It's sort of the premiere, because even if you do the iTunes Match, that one costs $25 a year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unlimited at $25 a year, but it costs money. So the nice thing about iTunes Match, though, is it doesn't actually upload your songs. It goes through the list of your songs and provides you the best quality. So if you ripped it at some lower quality.
years ago, before it was technically legal. Yeah.
Or you got it from a defunct website that starts with an N and ends with an Appster, then
that's still fair.
If you got that, if you
not the so, way it used to be,
yeah. Nope. If you have one of those songs, it's almost like an amnesty thing, because you pay the $25 and then they will give you the real version of that song at the highest AAC quality that they have, and so
for as long as you have that service.
Well, you can download it from the cloud. So you can, in other words, you sign up.
Really?
Sign up, get all your music out there in the cloud, make sure it's all good, then delete everything you got, and then download the new versions. Yep.
Yay, bandwidth.
Yeah.
Everything you've got. Okay.
If you wanted to do that, if you were going to cancel your $25. So, yeah, I took everything off my computer. I put it on a hard drive. I have like a terabyte backup drive. Uh-huh. So I put all my music over there. And now everything lives in the cloud. It lives in Google Play. And I don't have to worry about it taking up room on my computer or my hard drive crashing and me losing a bunch of music.
You know what's great?
What?
It comes completely integrated with an Android phone, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
I pay the $25 for the iTunes Match, too, just because I have
$25 lying around that you can spend.
Oh, wow. Nicely played, Kitch.
It's $25 a year.
That's still $25 a year.
It's true. But I have iPhones. I have Faith has an iPhone. I have an iPhone. Helen has an iTouch. And we have iPad. So with having it all up there in iTunes, everybody has all the songs.
What? That's $100.
No, it's $25 for the whole family.
Right. Now that's interesting.
So everybody gets access to all of our music. All the time.
Now that's really interesting, because sometimes Chelsea will like download a song or an album, and I'm like, hey, I like that. Now I have to go download it and pay for it too.
No, you don't.
And it used to not be that way in this country. By golly. We made these things called cassettes.
That's right.
Record.
We were ripping before ripping was cool.
That's right.
Yeah, I used to rip them off the radio, man. I didn't even buy them.
Oh boy,
I would rip songs off the radio. I'd wait because I knew it was in the countdown at the end of the day, right? Uh-huh. And I knew it was okay. Last night it was number 5, so I'm ready. You know, I'm ready for. Mm-hmm. And okay, it's gonna play. Oh, that's the song I want. Pull, you know, and I'd miss maybe. So I had all these mixtapes with some guy talking at the beginning, or some right. guy some guy at the end, and that was Dagal's band with Freeze Frame.
Oh, nice. Well, I actually just downloaded a song. It's an older song. It's one that I, kind of like heard a couple of times, and so it was just sort of in my head. I'm not sure if you've heard of this band. It's called, hang on a second. Let me look it up. It's called Journey.
Journey?
It's Don't Stop Believing. I think that's it.
Are you kidding me?
That's on Rock
Band.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
Are you kidding me?
Guy, I don't know that.
How cliche. Journey is my favorite band ever.
So you've heard of them?
Yeah. But that song is like, that's overplayed, man. You got to get good songs.
Not if you've never really ever heard the whole song before.
Yeah.
You've never heard the whole song.
The other one that I just downloaded, and I really don't know it, but I, it was sort of a, hey, this one's good. This one might be good too. Wheels in the Sky. So I'm looking forward to, listening to that one, just to kind of try it out.
Oh my, you're killing me. You're killing me. Here's some Stone in Love.
Those crazy nights, I do remember. That's the guy.
Yeah, that's the guy.
that guy was also in a band called Journey.
Yeah, that's
so
the same.
I don't know what you were playing.
Yeah, that's Stone in Love. Get the whole album. Escape. Get the whole album.
Escape. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it out yet? Because I don't know.
Came out in 1982.
Can I order the pre-release? Oh, okay.
Oh, you're wow. Killing me. You need to get Escape, and then you need to get Frontiers. Get that whole album.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we talk about something I care about?
Oh, boy. Here we go. God, you guys are so lame.
Go ahead.
Lamest stuff in the world. You guys. That's what I'm going to put under my lamest stuff out there. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I want to move on to this next topic that I've seen Brad talk about several times on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
And that I've tweeted about on Twitter.
Okay. What is Twitter?
It is.
What is that about? I don't know that. I'm just kidding. I didn't mean, right. Go ahead.
Back in the day.
The Bible Show.
The Bible. Yes. It's called The Bible on the History Channel. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, Robert, have you seen any of it?
I have recorded them, but I'm always behind. I like to wait to see what other people say
before
I waste my time.
Have you watched any of them?
No.
Okay.
I watched the first half hour of the first episode.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so that kind of tells me what you thought about things. We are halfway through the third episode. Because we record it and then we watch it, but we have to watch it while Helen's awake because she's watching it with us. And uh-huh. so and it takes us a long time to watch them because we have to stop and correct them. So
wow.
Yeah, for instance, Aether Swift only watched the first 15 minutes of the first episode.
Because you're so much more open-minded than she is.
She's 15 more minutes open-minded.
Yeah, that's it.
That's how many degrees he's open-minded. He's 15 more degrees open-minded than she is.
Mm-hmm. So, it's bad.
Well, I've got it on my coolest stuff out there list and my lamest stuff out there list. And I will... And you're going to ask me why?
Yeah, I want to know why it's on the coolest stuff out there list.
Because, first of all, it is the most popular history show on the History Channel ever.
That's true.
Okay. It's sending a message, and this is very shocking. They've already released statements going, we had no idea. Are we to give them more money? You know. But when David attacks the Hittites, there's like 12 of them. You know. it said in the battle he killed, you know, like 10,000 men that day, but in the show there were 12 guys in a tent, you know. It was 12 guys, a tent, and a donkey. And no, it wasn't David, it was Samson. It was Samson, and it was supposed to have killed all these people. And and then he supposedly killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass, and there were in the movie there was 8. But
yeah.
And okay, so back to why it's on my coolest list. All right. It's the most popular movie out there. It's sending a message to the History Channel. It's sending a message, I think, to a lot of people of saying, hey, you know, there is a bunch of vocal people out there who say this, that, and the other. And I think, but there's a group of people out here who really long for good quality, you know, something that we can watch. You know, it's why Duck Dynasty is so popular.
Yeah,
I mean, mm-hmm. It's like, it's just for the same reasons. And even though this show is not very accurate, it's not any worse than the Message Bible. I mean, if you know, there's plenty of Christians going to church with the Living Bible tucked under their arm, and this isn't any worse than that. Okay, I mean, it's inaccurate. And the stuff that they leave out doesn't bother me because I know they can't put everything in there because the show's not long enough. The show would have to be, you know, Charlton Heston would have to be involved and it'd be 30 hours long to tell one little story. But,
you know, I was going to say, you know, at least they got the names right. And then I remembered that his name wasn't Abraham always.
Right, right.
So
they messed up. Yeah. What bothers me is the stuff they put in. I understand them leaving things out because they don't have time, so they're editing, right?
Uh-huh.
But what bothers me is when they they put stuff in that, that wasn't in the biblical story. And that's when we really have to stop and say, okay, Helen, here's the real story. You know, it's, or did that really happen? Like, with King Saul, this one happened to us, and you think, you know, your Bible, and then King Saul kills himself on the battlefield. And I'm like, I don't remember the story ending that way. And then we look it up, and sure enough, it did. That's the way it ended. Yeah.
Wait, what? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, King Saul killed himself.
Fell on the sword.
Fell on the sword.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking King Ahab. Sorry.
No, King Saul. So you know, we look it up, and we say, oh, yeah, that really did happen. And so anyway, the point is, though, that it's – in my house, we're enjoying it because it's really prompting a lot of Bible study. I mean, we're really going back and reading these stories and saying, okay, well, let's go back and read this story because I don't remember it happening that way, or what part of that was true, I wonder. So let's go back and read and find out. And then on the internet, I'm following several people like Chris Rosenberg who are constantly correcting it and giving you little hints of where it's wrong. So that's cool. But the stuff they put in is what bothers me. Okay. The stuff they add that wasn't in the Bible. Like when Sarah followed Abraham to the mountain where he was going to, he was going to sacrifice Isaac. He was told by God to take Isaac to Mount Sinai and sacrifice him. And in the show, they show Sarah panicking and following him up there.
Because it was only like a 10-minute walk.
Yeah, which also was, again, everything is smaller and it's like... So she follows him out of this camp 10 minutes up this mountain and she's yelling, no, don't do it. Oh my gosh, you're going to kill our son, you horrible man. And then the sun comes up. And the other thing that bothered me was the sun comes... Isaac comes by his father. His father reaches out to hug him, and he just runs right by him towards his mom. And I'm like,
yeah, right.
Okay, I don't think that's the way it happened. That's not in my Bible, okay? And there was other stuff that the fight scene in Sodom between the angels and the people. First of all, it bothered me. And I understand, like I said before, I can't get mad at them for leaving stuff out. But the reason, the example of Sodom's sin that was given in the Bible was homosexuality. Mm-hmm. That wasn't all they did wrong. They were wicked people. But that was the example given in the Bible of their sin. And, of course, they conveniently left that out.
Yes.
And so that kind of bothered me. But then the fight scene where these guys were some kind of ninja angels.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was a little... Were they doing Kamen Rider, kid?
No.
Okay, I just wondered. So,
because Israel hadn't been invented yet.
Okay.
So
it was invented. Patent pending.
I just wondered maybe that was, like God's preferred martial art. I don't know. So,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was a little much for me. And there was and then in the very beginning with Noah's Ark, it kind of bothered me that Noah could build it was Noah and this Ark, and he's reading the Ten Commandments. He's reading the first part of Genesis to his to his family, but Genesis hadn't been written yet. So,
was he actually reading, or was he just reciting?
He was reciting it, and yeah, I guess it could be passed down. But the way the biblical story goes is this was revealed to Moses. Now, whether it was it's possible that it could have been a tradition, an oral tradition that had been handed down. But the way I preferred, and I think the way it was taught to me, is that these things were revealed to Moses by God, and he wrote them down. In other words, the whole Bible is God breathed, and it wasn't just an oral tradition that got written down. I think, and that's. It was a small implication, but it still bugged me. It wasn't a huge red flag. The bigger red flag was that Noah was perfectly capable of building a boat that could keep the ocean out, but not the rainwater falling from above. Because he's in this boat being soaked with rainwater falling in on it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I thought that was a little much.
Go ahead.
No, it's a stupid comment. Go.
I decided to turn off the first episode when they decided to play Moses off as a charismatic and confident, yet slightly insane and psychotic leader that felt like he was very important, and that Pharaoh would drop everything to see him, and had complete faith in God every step of the way during the Exodus story.
Yeah, so they
turned that off then.
Well, they simplified it, and that did bother me. They simplified a lot of it. They didn't do the miracles. They didn't do all the plagues were boiled down to just a little montage that lasted 30 seconds. I didn't understand the reason why he gave Pharaoh the scar. That was not in the Bible.
Yeah,
we couldn't find that anywhere in the Bible, and yet there was nowhere in the Bible where him and the Pharaoh were children together and they fought. I couldn't find that in the Bible.
Yep.
Well, see, now that's an easy special effect to handle.
So they could do that.
It's like, I will scar you again, you know, river turning to blood and flies. That's a little more difficult.
I mean, it does make sense that they did know each other, because Moses, being part of the royal family, would have had access to go to Pharaoh, because normally a normal citizen, especially a Jewish citizen, would have not have been able to, not been allowed to go to talk to the Pharaoh. So the fact that he was raised as or in the royal family, that and that's why he had permission, that's why he had access to the Pharaoh. That made sense. It's always made sense. I've always been taught that was the reason he was picked by God, and you know, it was, that God had been so careful to plant someone who would have access to the Pharaoh so that he could deliver these curses. But yet the way they portrayed it with the scarring and the fighting, and then it's like, why are you adding stuff? I don't understand. If you don't have time to tell the whole story, why are you adding things in that aren't there? So anyway, I'm leery, but it's not heretical. It's not, at least I haven't got to the Jesus part yet, but, but it's not to the point of, it's still something that, at least in our family, we can use to go and actually look at the source and see the real story. And I think that's good. Now, have y'all seen, there's an app called the Jesus Movie. Did I already talk about this?
I don't think so.
No.
There's an app called the Jesus Movie. And you can look it up in the iTunes if you have that. I don't know if it's available on Android, but I think it is.
Checking now.
Okay. And the Jesus Movie is a movie and it doesn't start with Jesus. It starts before then, but it tells the prophecy of Jesus, and then it's about salvation. And the point of this movie, and it's available in several languages, and the point of this movie is free, by the way, is you can sit down with this on a bus somewhere on your iPhone and watch it with anybody. And from any country, you know, in any language, and you just plop it down there. It's sort of a missionary tool, and you can then have a conversation about it. And it's being shown. It's a huge missionary tool being used in India and China, where the whole villages will come together just to watch this, you know, this movie together. And in fact, they're watching it over and over again, just because it's the only, in some cases, the only Bible they have. And So anyway, I think that is a much better portrayal than I expect, because I haven't seen the History Channel's version yet, but I suspect that that's going to be a much better portrayal of the biblical message then, because that was its intent. Whereas and that's the other thing that bothers me about the History Channel of the Bible. I'm not sure what its intent is. Is its intent to educate? Is its intent to convey the biblical message? Because I don't think it's doing that.
I think it's just entertainment, because, you know, I mean, even the History Channel has shows that are just entertainment now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you look at the Learning Channel, and they haven't taught anything in years.
No, I know. And you got the History Channel, who, you know, they do the Pawn Stars. And they try to tie in a little history in there, but it's really stupid. It's really reaching to try to tie in some history. But regardless of that, I still don't understand. Even the makers of this show, I'm not sure what their intent, what their purpose in making this was. If it's trying to educate, if it's trying to present a view of the Bible, I can't really discern any.
It almost feels like they were convinced finally that this is a good project, and it was made in. Like I keep hearing that it's made well.
Well, right? it's
and it's like produced well.
It is, but it is also does not have a large budget, and you can tell that.
Oh, okay.
The budget is spent on special effects. I mean, those I think were added in afterwards. The Moses walking through the Dead Sea when he delivered the people out of Egypt, which was completely inaccurate because it was all done. That whole thing was done in 5 minutes on the show. I mean, these 200 Jews ran out of Egypt.
200, not 3 million?
You're right. 200 Jews ran out of Egypt. They got down to the banks of the river. 40 guys in chariots were chasing them. And he raised his arms, and then the ocean split, and they ran across in darkness. They got out the other side. The sun was shining again. And then he lowered his arms, and then the water collapsed on the 40 soldiers. And that was the end of it. I mean, you can CGI in people. Do they know that? So,
you're right. Have you seen Lord of the Rings?
Have you seen Lord of the Rings? it's... the part about it being the wind blowing all night so that they walked across on dry land was not, you know, that was left out. So just the whole the whole thing, how just that little piece right there just boiled it. You got to take 2 hours to tell that story. You can't tell that story in 5 minutes. And they keep doing that over and over again. It's very frustrating.
One of the things that I heard, and I'm just really repeating someone else, was that they would take opportunities where there is real drama, and they would portray it as just this little thing that happened, and then they would try and add drama in some other way. And I'm like, what's more dramatic than what happens in the Bible?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's like the part with Sarah. It was, you know, they took away from the drama at the hilltop with God, you know, with God sparing the son and providing the lamb. They went through that very quickly, and then they added the drama with Sarah coming up.
Well, so do you think that they do that to make it more accessible to the average person so that they don't have to explain what the social mores were?
I don't know what their purpose is. I don't know what their agenda is. I don't know if they have one. I don't know. I don't know if they're honestly doing their best or if there's some agenda here that I don't know about. But when you say it's well done, it is well done. I mean, there's not phone lines in the background. Well, it doesn't look like soap opera actors.
As far as like a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. It's not soap opera acting. It's, you know, it's very good. It's well done, but horribly inaccurate. And you could tell that. That there were budget constraints on extras.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
So would you say that it's a good first try at something like this? I mean, it's obviously popular.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if they would have just taken a smaller chunk, let's just say they did
the whole Bible.
Yeah. If they just
like 5,000 years, isn't it?
Yeah. If they'd have just done Genesis. Let's just do Genesis. Okay. Let's just do that. And we'll take 7 episodes and try to do Genesis. And then maybe in the second season, when we have more money, we'll try Exodus. Okay, but we can pay some people.
You
know,
that's actually a really
California
good idea.
Desert.
I mean, you could just do Genesis, and there's 3 of the biggest world religions right there that could be happy with it.
Well, are you going to put Isaac on the mountain or Ishmael? Yeah, I mean, you don't get very far.
I think we have to go with American sensibilities on that one. I'm just kidding.
I'm just saying Muslims aren't going to be happy if you got Isaac up there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, it has to be better than what NBC did with the Jesus thing. Do you remember that?
Who?
It was canceled before it was even, it was like 3 episodes in or something. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Was a TV show. It was only like a couple of years ago.
It was called Jesus?
Called, I think it was just called Jesus, and I believe it was NBC.
And it was really bad?
Well, it got canceled really quickly, so I can't imagine NBC doing a good job at something like that.
Are you talking about Kings?
Oh, was it Kings?
With about David?
Oh, maybe that was it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, yeah. How was that? Is this better than that?
That wasn't...
I didn't
Kings
see
was
it.
Not trying to be, this is the story of the Bible. It was trying to be, here's the story of the Bible in a modern setting. So
okay. They
had to take a lot of...
License.
Yeah.
All right.
Like Goliath was a tank, and the sling was a bazooka.
Okay, got
and it was a big deal that David went single, was one person through no man's land in trench warfare, and with a single sling missile, he took down an entire Goliath.
Oh, okay.
So that was the big thing there. So
okay, well, that's not the worst idea ever. You know, if you're going to call it like,
but it didn't do well.
No, it didn't do well. Like, I don't think they even finished the season.
I think in general, we don't like people messing with our Bible. But
yeah,
maybe we're a little desensitized now that everybody's that we've had 20 years of the NIV. So what are you going to do?
Well, and things like that don't usually get a lot of money. So you're not going to get the best director. It's really just an uphill battle to make something that's...
I would say
the greatest epic story of all time.
I would say that the actors have done a really good job, and I would say the directing has been really good. Cinematography has been really good. I mean, those are the things that I think has stood out. Those, you know, you're getting really quality performances. You're getting good cinematography. You're getting all that. So in that way, it's well produced. But when you see an army coming at you, and it's 12 people, you know, it kind of takes away from the story. You know, when you know there's supposed to be 10,000, and even if you don't know there's 10,000, it's still not impressive to anybody to see 12 people charging. You know, it's like, okay, there's 12 chariots. It's hard to make that look like a bunch.
Hmm.
Anyway. All right. Anything else? Kids, past kids, just bedtime. So,
yeah, that's it.
Right. He's the youngest one here.
Well, he always says I have to go.
He even has to sleep.
8 o'clock. He always says I have to go.
I have something that starts at 8:30.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So. Well, very quickly, we got Robert. I wanted to talk about this if we have a chance. This is a more important thing. Mirror Christianity. You're starting a new. You're attending a Bible study. Are you hosting a Bible? What is the deal?
Well, our church is also a school, and the associate pastor is also a Bible and history teacher. Nice. And so I think at the high school level, and each year they go through the book of Mere Christianity. So it's basically like a 6-week shortened version of that. And he's, you know, he has more energy than all three of us combined, and he's just super knowledgeable. Like, you could, like, it would bore him that we were talking about, you know, hobnails, because, you know, he's known that since he was two. Yeah, he's like, that's nothing.
Is he watching the Bible?
I'm going to ask him.
Pulling his hair out.
Right. So we're actually starting in book 3. Of Mere Christianity, which I forgot how small the book was.
You're starting in the third part of the book. Oh, okay, yeah.
Exactly. Because, you know, he said, we're all Christians here, so I don't have to prove the existence of God to you. And I was a little bit, I was like, oh, you know, the arguments are so well organized.
Yes,
you know,
they
and
are.
Well thought out that maybe I'll just go back and read those. But I am looking forward to this next one. It's tomorrow night, so...
Good.
It's good so far.
Excellent. The only thing that bumps me out about that book is that he talks about evolution in it as a fact that he uses it in one of his arguments for.
Well, it was new.
Like, this is the new evolution of man. Would it would you know? And So it was kind of interesting. I was like, oh, that's kind of rubbing me the wrong way. And it wasn't heretical or anything. It was just bothering me.
Yeah.
I don't like my theologians talking about evolution. Sorry. But other than that, it's excellent. I actually have it on cassette. That's how long I've had that. Wow. I have the copy of the book, but I also have it on cassette. I don't have a cassette player anymore, but I
yeah, right.
There it sits. Right under my tea glass.
I've been replacing computers for the past 2 weeks for a big client we have at work, and
yeah,
we're running into printers that have parallel cables only.
Oh yes.
Oh my gosh.
The network printers.
Remember how big those were?
The NS4600s.
No.
6 MPs.
It's like a desktop laser jet printer.
The
only output is a parallel port.
Yeah, 6 MPs.
HP LaserJet 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had 6 MPs. 6 Hewlett-Packard 6 MPs, whatever those are.
Yes.
With toners. I bought a brand new printer 2 weeks ago for my desk here at home because they finally are making a affordable home printer with toner in it.
Oh, because wow.
I am not buying those inkjet things anymore. That's $30 every time you turn around.
Yep, that's true.
30? 30 a cartridge?
That's what I mean, 30 a cartridge, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you need like black, and then you need the, you know, so it's $60.
So Brother has actually made, I forget what model
number it is.
But Brother is making a toner home, it's a toner printer.
Huh. Very nice.
And well, so you like the Brothers?
I like brothers.
Cool. Okay. I don't have any brothers. You know, I'm an only child. So
they've never made a product that didn't work like it was supposed to. That I've owned.
Robert's making jokes.
I know. I'm ignoring
Robert's
him.
Robert's got jokes.
I know. I'm ignoring him.
They don't count if nobody laughs.
But I was able to, it was easy. I was able to set it up as a network printer. And then I have a Lantronics, which, by the way, I got for Christmas, which is the coolest thing ever. A Lantronics X printer. You know, the kids know what that is, I'm sure.
Nope.
No?
Oh, what the heck is a Lantronics?
I stumped kids. Awesome. No,
you didn't stump me. You just said something that I don't know about.
Well, it's because it's an Apple product. It's not an Apple product. It's made for Apple computers. It's called an X printer. And it's a print server, basically, is what it is. It's just a little box, and you plug it into your router.
Uh-huh.
And then any of your printers that are on Wi-Fi, you can print from your phone, you can print from your iPad, you can print from any laptop, and you don't have to load any drivers or anything. So it's sweet.
And you don't have to have Apple Air?
What?
You don't have to have Apple Air?
No.
Oh.
Oh, I've had that for a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, it's built in to my HP printer through Google. So, I mean, I've had that for a year.
Oh, okay. Oh, there cool. you go.
Yeah. Okay. Get with the times, Apple. Come on.
Seriously,
yeah. Anyway.
Proprietary hardware? You're still doing that? Okay.
This is Lantronics. It's not an Apple product. It's just made for Apple products.
Yeah. Okay.
Lantronics X printer. It's very cheap. It was like $60, and you plug it into your router, and it becomes your X printer. It becomes your print server, and you don't have to have any apps. You don't have to load any drivers. You don't have to set anything up. I mean, you literally plug it in, go to your phone, hit print. It'll say this printer. You say yes, that printer, and it goes. It's awesome.
Yep. Good times.
Good times. Anyway, I don't know why that got. I guess I'll put that under the coolest stuff. So, no, my point was I was talking about the Brother printer because that's one of the coolest things. Toner printer.
Oh, yeah.
No more inkjets.
Yay.
In my house. Because they end up just sitting there. Or does the printer work? No, it needs ink.
Yeah, it's dried out.
I'll print it at work tomorrow. Okay, we need 30 copies.
What I hate is that when you have black, like you've got a lot of black left.
Yes.
But because you're low on your color, it won't print even in grayscale.
Oh, hate that. Hate that.
HP, I'm looking at you.
Yes. It's only certain printers that'll do that, but it's so annoying.
They are an ink company, and they give you a free printer with your first purchase of ink.
Exactly. There you go.
And they used to be one of the best. you know, back when they were making the laser jet too, because that thing was a tank. You could fix it.
Yeah.
And then it would work some more. So, yeah.
Now you want to get
I hate disposable technology.
Get a brother. Get a brother. This one
I was thinking about a sister, but, you know, I just think that
this thing
would fight less.
$109 for it, and it's 4,200 pages. It's supposed to print 4,200 pages before it runs out of toner. And the toner cartridges, guess how much the toner cartridge is? $35.
No, they were $135.
So you're paying the same amount. Of course, you're only getting gray. It's, you know, it doesn't print in color, but 4,200 pages and then $35 and 4,200 more pages. So
what are you printing out?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I teach a class at school, so I
print stuff.
Every once in a while, you just need to print something. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and because we hardly ever print anything anymore, I had a HP printer sitting over there that wasn't being used. And every once in a while, I need to print something. I'm like, oh, it's out of ink. You know, or it's been sitting there for 6 months and the ink's all dried up and it won't print.
Yeah. Oh well, I know a trick about that. You know how to get that back, right? You just take a little isopropyl alcohol with a Q-tip, and you can rub off, you know, the ink that's there.
Yeah, ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah,
that's right. Yep. Speaking of, ain't nobody got time.
You gotta go.
I do.
Okay. Well, bye everybody. Thanks for joining us this week on Blind Squirrel Radio, where we discovered Journey, a brand new band with great songs we can listen to. All right, everybody. Vios con Dios.
Vios con Dios.
Vios con Dios.
That sounds like that guy.
No.